Hare Krishna, thank you for coming this evening. I'm going to speak a little bit about meditation and the soul in bhakti yoga. Yoga is very much in people's minds these days. Just recently, the government of India established a minister of yoga. I mean, just like here in the United States, we have a government, and there's a ministry of defense and a minister of education. Well, we call them secretaries. Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of State. In India, they have a ministry of yoga and alternative health now. Very interesting. So, first, I'm going to say something about the soul. The whole process of bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, is based on understanding that within the body there is the soul, and the two things are different. You know, the body is made of matter, the soul is spiritual in nature. In Bhagavad Gita, the primary spiritual text from India, Lord Krishna says, Dehinosmi Nyatha Dehe, within the body is the embodied soul. Of course, today, many people don't believe in the existence of the soul. You know, they think we're just machines made of matter and that our consciousness is produced by chemicals interacting in the brain. But the spiritual tradition of India is based on another idea, namely that consciousness is an emanation from the soul, which is non-material. It's not produced by chemicals in the brain. And not only is the soul different than the body, it is part of God. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to his friend and disciple Arjuna, Mamaivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatana. Lord Krishna is saying, the soul is part of me, and like me, the soul is eternal. So, that is a very important part of bhakti yoga. It means not only are we not the body, not only are we spiritual beings, but as spiritual beings we're part of God, which indicates there should be some kind of relationship between us as individual souls and the Supreme Soul, God. And that relationship was described by an avatar or incarnation of Lord Krishna named Lord Chaitanya, who appeared in India 500 years ago. His teachings are contained in a book called the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in that book he says, Jivara Sarupa Hoy Krishnara Nitya Das. The eternal form of the soul is that of eternal servant of Krishna. So that is the nature of the relationship between the soul and God. It's one of service. Now, when we hear the word service, sometimes it seems not very attractive. But the kind of service that the individual soul renders to the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is not like the ordinary concept of service that we have in this material world. It is based on something called rasa, or spiritual pleasure. And, you know, this is described in many of the ancient texts of India, including the Upanishads. For example, the Taittiriya Upanishad says, Raso vaisa rasam hyavayam labdvanandi bhavati. And that means God is the source of rasas, pleasurable, spiritual, loving relationships. And the soul who serves God in such a relationship enjoys bliss, spiritual pleasure. So that is the kind of service that we're speaking about here. And we all have our experience of relationships in this world. But they are based on paradigmatic spiritual relationships that the soul experiences with God. I'll mention some of these relationships or rasas. One of them is called the Sakya Ras, the loving relationship as a friend. So we may experience that we have a nice friend in this world, and it's a nice kind of relationship. But that relationship on the material platform is temporary. However, it's a reflection of the kind of relationship that some souls have with the Supreme Soul, Krishna. It's a relationship of eternal friendship. This painting shows Lord Krishna enjoying his pastimes with his eternal spiritual associates who relate to him in this mood of friendship. Another type of relationship is the kind of relationship a parent, a mother or father, experiences with a child, with a son or a daughter. It is a very pleasurable relationship. It's one of the strongest relationships, the relationship between parent and child. But in this world, that relationship between parent and child is temporary. It only lasts for a certain amount of time, and it's mixed with various kinds of difficulties. But it's a reflection of a relationship that some eternal spirit souls have with the Supreme Soul, God. And when God enters into such a relationship with an eternal confidential associate, he agrees to play the part of a child. I mean, normally, when people think of God, they think of God as being the Supreme Father or the Supreme Master, but it's actually possible for a soul to experience a loving relationship with God in which that soul takes the position of superior, of parent. And in order to sustain that relationship, God, Krishna, agrees to play the part of a child. In this painting, we see Krishna as a child and enjoying a parental relationship with a devotee named Yashoda, who plays the role of his mother. Of course, God is eternal. He has no father or mother, but because he enjoys loving relationships of all kinds, and one of those loving relationships is the parental relationship, or Vatsalya Ras, he agrees to enter into such relationships. Another type of relationship is the kind of relationship that exists between a lover and the beloved. We see a reflection of that kind of relationship here in the material world, but it's temporary. It's based on the body, and it becomes mixed with various types of material difficulties. But it's a reflection of the kind of relationship that some souls experience with the Supreme Soul, Krishna. It's called the Madhurya Ras, the loving relationship between lover and beloved. And there is a certain kind of spiritual pleasure there. In this relationship, goes on eternally. It's not like some temporary loving relationship that we may experience on this material level of reality. So, to enter into one of these relationships in its full state requires the awakening of a spiritual body. We're now in a material body that is temporary. It is subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. So in order to experience a rasa, a loving relationship with God, one needs to be situated in one's original spiritual form, which is called swarupa. So in the ultimate state, although we can make progress towards realizing these things on this level of reality, the soul's swarupa and its rasa, its eternal relationship with the Supreme Soul, Krishna, are meant to be experienced in the spiritual world. So there is a spiritual world beyond this material universe, where the soul can be situated in its eternal form and its eternal loving relationship with Krishna, with God. So why aren't we there now? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the book that I mentioned previously, which contains the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, we find an answer to that question. So Lord Chaitanya, actually, he was Krishna come to this world to teach the process of bhakti yoga. And to teach it, he practiced it himself. It's best to teach by example. So he was asked questions about all of these things, and here's the answer he gave to a question about why are we here. Krishna Bhuli Se Jiva Anadi Bahir Mukha Ata Eva Mayatari Deya Samsara Sukha. Forgetting Krishna, the soul has turned away from him since time immemorial. Therefore, the material energy gives the soul suffering in the cycle of birth and death. So in this condition, the soul has forgotten God, and I don't mean just the concept of God, but God's personality, God's form, God's reality. The soul has also forgotten its own spiritual form, its own spiritual body, or at least it has failed to awaken it. It has also forgotten its rasa, its loving relationship with God, and it has forgotten the place where those things are to be ultimately experienced. It has forgotten the spiritual world. It has become absorbed in this material world. So, having said a few words about the soul, I'll now speak a little bit about yoga and meditation. So when most people hear the word yoga today, they generally are thinking about the Ashtanga or Eightfold Yoga system established in ancient India by the sage Patanjali. Normally that's what they're thinking about. And when they think about it, they think in terms of bodily postures or exercises. But that is only one of the eight elements of the Patanjali yoga system. The first element is yama, which means prohibitions, negative rules. Don't do this, don't do that. The second element is niyama, which are positive rules and recommendations. Do this, do that. Those are preparatory. After that comes asana, bodily positions. And that's what most people focus on. But they're either not aware of or they ignore these other elements. Then beyond that, there is pranayama, which is a system of breath control. Then, fifth, there is pratyahara, which means withdrawal of the senses from the material sense objects. Then there is dharana, which means concentration of the mind. And then there is dhyana, which means continuous concentration of the mind. And then finally there is samadhi, which means complete absorption of the mind in what it's concentrating on. Simply stated, those are the eight elements in the Ashtanga yoga system of Patanjali. And most people only think about the third element. So, if we look at the whole list of eight, we see that the last three, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, are basically connected with meditation, focusing the mind. However, here in this center, we are practicing another type of yoga. The two are related. They have some relationship, but they are also distinct in some ways. We're practicing bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. And in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, that is the topmost yoga system. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shradavan bhajate yomam. I left out a word there. Same yuktatmato mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So another name for Krishna is Yogeshwara, the master of all systems of yoga. And he's saying, of all the systems of yoga, the yoga of devotion, transcendental loving service, bhakti yoga, is the highest. But as I said, there are some similarities between the system of bhakti yoga and the Patanjali yoga system, sometimes called the Ashtanga or Eightfold Yoga System. If we look at the Ashtanga yoga limb, yama, the negative rules, we see that there are five principal rules given, five principal prohibitions, ahimsa, nonviolence. And in bhakti yoga, we see there's an equivalent to that. We have a rule, no eating meat, fish, or eggs. So that means a practical application of non-violence. We don't accept killing animals. Then there is satya, truthfulness, which can be expressed as a negative prohibition, no lying. So we have in our bhakti yoga rules the principle of no gambling. So gambling is based on cheating and lying, so no lying. There's some similarity there. Asteya, no stealing. Of course, that's also connected with gambling, and of course, we do not steal. Then there's brahmacharya, which in the Ashtanga yoga system means complete celibacy. In bhakti yoga, we have the principle of no illicit sex. which means one can be completely celibate, or one can enter into regulated married life, where one vows to engage in sex only for the purpose of procreation. And then there's the principle of aparigraha, non-possessiveness, not being attached to material possessions. And bhakti yogis are trained to see everything as God's property. So that means we don't see anything as ours. We aren't possessive in that way, but we are possessive in the sense that we want to see everything used in God's service. You know, not for our own personal benefit, but we want to use everything in God's service. So there are some similarities between bhakti yoga and ashtanga yoga in terms of yama. And there's niyama, the positive rules. In the ashtanga yoga system, there is the principle of saucha, cleanliness. We also follow that, cleanliness. Then there is santosha, being satisfied with the bare necessities of life. In other words, not being greedy and overly acquisitive. So the founder, Acharya, founding spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement, Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, recommended simple living and high thinking. He repeated that many, many times. He encouraged his disciples to live as simply and naturally as they could, while putting most of their energy into developing their Krishna consciousness through the bhakti yoga system. Another element of the Ashtanga yoga system in the terms of niyama is tapas, austerity. So we all have to perform some austerity. In the bhakti yoga system, there is also the practice of tapodivyam, divine austerities, which are meant to help one develop a sense of detachment from material sense gratification and attachment to the sources of spiritual happiness or pleasure within. One thing we advise is rising early in the morning, taking bath, and then engaging in some spiritual practice. Another element of niyama in the Ashtanga yoga system is swadhyaya, study of bhakti. And in bhakti yoga, we also do that. Swadhyaya means study of the Vedic literature. So a bhakti yogi, and you're all practicing bhakti yoga. By sitting here, you're practicing bhakti yoga at this moment. But we engage in the study of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other texts. That's part of the practice of bhakti yoga. And any of you can also add that to your life. If you want to practice bhakti yoga, take a copy of Bhagavad Gita, read a little bit of it each day, try to apply the principles in your life. Then, finally, in terms of niyama in the Ashtanga yoga system, there is the principle of Ishvara Pranidhana. This means surrender to God. Ishvara is a Sanskrit word. It means the supreme controller, i.e. God. So, of course, here in the practice of bhakti yoga, we're also engaged in that same principle, surrendering to Krishna. Krishna recommends it in the Bhagavad Gita. Mamekam sharanam vraja. Just surrender unto me. So many people don't realize that this is also part of the Ashtanga yoga system, surrender to God. But if you look at the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, you'll see these things. So, as I mentioned, Lord Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, just surrender unto me. Then there's in Ashtanga Yoga, asana, bodily positions. And normally these were meant to be practiced in an isolated place. And not just for an hour or two, but for one's entire life. In bhakti yoga, we also have the equivalent of asana, means putting oneself in a sacred place, like a temple like this, in the association of other practitioners of bhakti yoga, and engaging in the practice of bhakti yoga or devotional service. So, you could say that by coming here, sitting here this evening, hearing this talk, and you're engaged in asana. Then comes pranayama, breath control. And in the Ashtanga yoga system, there are some elaborate techniques of controlling the inward and outward breathing process as a preparation for the ultimate stage of meditation and withdrawal of the senses from material sense objects. But in the practice of bhakti yoga, we have something equivalent. We use the breath in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and in reciting Krishna's teachings from the Bhagavad Gita and other bhakti yoga texts. So that is a form of using, of controlling the breathing process. In order for me to speak like this, I have to breathe. I have to breathe in and out in order to produce the sound vibrations. So you can also do that. You can privately chant the Hare Krishna mantra on beads, and in that way engage in the bhakti yoga equivalent of pranayama. You can speak about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita to your friends and associates and relatives, and in that way engage your breath in pranayama. In bhakti yoga. So the chanting of mantras is also mentioned in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. For example, it is said, Tasya Vachaka Pranava in the Yoga Sutras. The sacred word, sacred sound is Om. And then it goes on to say, tad japa tad artha bhavanam, which means it should be chanted with deep feeling for its meaning. So, in the practice of bhakti yoga, we also chant mantras with deep feeling for their meaning. We especially chant the Hare Krishna mantra in that way, because it's recommended in the bhakti yoga text that one focus one's mind on that particular mantra. The next part of the Ashtanga yoga system is pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses from material engagement. So in Ashtanga yoga, the purpose of yama and niyama, following different rules and recommendations, asana and pranayama, is to restrain the senses from material engagement so that the mind can be concentrated in meditation. you know, if your senses are always out of control, running after this sensation and that sensation, you can't really concentrate your mind. So there is an attempt to still the senses by the asanas and the practice of pranayama. But in bhakti yoga, the same thing is achieved in a different way. By engaging the senses in the positive spiritual activities of devotional service to Krishna, the senses are automatically restrained from material activity. In other words, at this present moment, you're all sitting here, you're all listening to this, you're in the association of devotees, you're in the presence of Krishna, you're hearing, you know, something about the teachings of bhakti yoga. That means at this moment, your senses are restrained from material activity. And if one can 24 hours a day keep one's senses engaged in practical activities of devotional service, of bhakti yoga, then that means your senses are automatically not engaged in material activity. Because these activities that we're engaging in right now, these are spiritual activities, transcendental activities. So, the purpose of all these preliminary activities of the yoga system of Patanjali, the yama, the niyama, the asana, the prayana, the pratyahara, is to bring one to the point of being able to concentrate and focus the mind. And what is the ultimate purpose of that in the Ashtanga Yoga system? That is explained in one of the Yoga Sutras. It says, Tada drastu sarupe avastanam. Then, after achieving the perfection of meditation, the seer, the soul, is situated in its swarupa, its original form. So, either in Ashtanga Yoga or the practice of Bhakti Yoga, the goal is to uncover the soul's original form and activity. So, you know, the topic this evening was meditation and the soul and Bhakti Yoga. So that's the ultimate purpose of meditation in Bhakti Yoga. It's to become aware of the true nature of the soul apart from the material body and to further understand the activity of the soul, which is rendering bhakti, transcendental loving service to the Supreme Soul, Krishna. So, in Bhakti Yoga, we have different ways in which we can meditate on Krishna, who is the source of us all. We can meditate on the name of Krishna. We can meditate on the form of Krishna, the deity form, just like we have on the altar these various forms of Krishna and his different incarnations and avatars. They are there as an aid for meditation. We can meditate on the teachings of Krishna as they're expressed in books like Bhagavad Gita. We can meditate on the pastimes of Krishna, because Krishna comes to this world and he displays different activities here in relationship with his eternal associates who accompany him to this world. And basically he's displaying in his pastimes various rasas or relationships, loving relationships that it's possible for souls to have with him. And if we meditate on the descriptions of those pastimes that are contained in books like the Srimad Bhagavatam, then that can awaken in our own hearts the knowledge or realization of what our particular loving relationship with Krishna really is. And we can also meditate on service to Krishna. So, normally when people think of meditation, they think of inactivity, of emptying their minds and withdrawing from all activity. But in bhakti yoga, meditation is active. There is active meditation on Krishna's name. And this takes two forms, japa and kirtan. So just prior to this talk, we were engaging in kirtan, which means the loud congregational chanting of Krishna's names accompanied by musical instruments. And that can be done here in the temple. It can be done in your home. It can be done in the streets. Then we can also actively meditate on Krishna's name by the chanting of japa, which is a private meditation on beads. And these beads are available in the gift shop next door. You can get them and learn how to meditate on Krishna's name in that way. Then there is active meditation on Krishna's form. That kirtan in front of the deities was actually a kind of active meditation on Krishna's form. And you may have seen there were pujaris or priests on the altar offering different sacred objects to the form of Krishna. So that is a very active form of meditation, offering a flower to Krishna, offering incense to Krishna, offering different sacred objects, offering food to Krishna. And these are things that can be practiced not only here, but anyone in their own home can keep a small deity of Krishna, a painting of Krishna, and make these same kinds of offerings. And when you're doing that, when you're engaged in offering a flower to Krishna or incense to Krishna, it's a much more concentrated kind of meditation on the form of Krishna than if you were just trying to imagine some picture in your mind. We can also engage in active meditation on Krishna's teachings. It's one thing to just pick up a copy of Bhagavad Gita oneself and read it. That's beneficial. But it's a much more concentrated type of meditation if you try to explain what you have read to someone else. Then you really have to focus on it. It becomes a very intense meditation. And another form in which this active meditation on Krishna's teachings can take place is actually offering a copy of the book that you've read and which has come to have some meaning to you, offering that same book to someone else, to a friend, a relative, even a complete stranger. Becomes a very active kind of meditation on Krishna's teachings. It's also possible for the bhakti yogi to actively meditate on Krishna's pastimes. As I was mentioning, it's possible to read accounts of these things in books like the Krishna book and other books that are available on the table out there. But, you know, if you've attended any of our festivals, you'll see that sometimes we perform dances and plays where it's possible for a practitioner of bhakti yoga to actually act out in either dance or drama these same pastimes. And that becomes an even more intense form of meditation on these pastimes. And the bhakti yogi actively meditates on service to Krishna. And the particular service that a particular soul should render to Krishna is usually learned from instructions given by Krishna's representative, the guru, the genuine spiritual master, who will look at a particular person's nature and give them a service that's related to that. And, for example, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master saw that he knew English. He had studied English. So he said to him when he was a young man, "You should go to the Western world and spread this Krishna consciousness practice of bhakti yoga in the English language." So he did that. That was his service that he got from his guru, his spiritual master. And he meditated on that, not only just meditated about it mentally, but meditated on it in terms of actively trying to carry out that order by actually coming to the Western world, by actually trying to speak about these things to people that he met in the Western world who weren't necessarily having any kind of background in this. So, the result of this active meditation on Krishna and this practice of bhakti yoga is that one awakens the love for Krishna that is naturally there in the heart. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it said, "Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadyukabhanoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitti Karya Udai." Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of the living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. So it's a very important principle of bhakti yoga, is that love for Krishna, which contains the relationship with Krishna and everything related to that, it's already there in the heart, lying dormant. It simply has to be awakened. And by meditation in bhakti yoga, one will realize ultimately your swarupa, your original spiritual form. You will eventually come to understand your rasa, the original loving relationship of the soul with God. You'll come to understand and you will actually go to the soul's spiritual home, spiritual planet of Krishna called Goloka Vrindavan. And you will come to understand and practice the soul's eternal activity, devotional service to Krishna in one of these spiritual relationships. So, thank you. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yes?
I want to know the explanation because all of them are almost the same, but different explanations a little bit conflict me. In Prabhupada Gita or some other people's written Gita, explanations a little bit different. But the, about the yoga, like I do yoga from 1962, and I was teacher in Radhishya High School too. But the concentration of mind is not the same like yoga meditation. Meditation is not some practice different thing than other than think of Lord. Meditation only for the Krishna or Lord.
Yes, so you're raising an important point. Actually, there are hundreds of different editions of Bhagavad Gita ever since the Europeans first went to India in the 15th, 16th century. They began making different English, Italian, French, Spanish, German translations of Bhagavad Gita. But from the study of those Gitas, nobody actually became a Krishna Bhakta, a practitioner of Bhakti Yoga. So Srila Prabhupada called his translation of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. In other words, he was bringing out the essence of it, not imposing his own agenda on it. He wanted Krishna's agenda to shine forth in its purity as it is. So it's a very important point that you're mentioning. In order to get the true message of Bhagavad Gita, it has to be received from someone who is a pure devotee of Krishna, who is an actual realized practitioner of Bhakti Yoga. So we're fortunate to have Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.